Hello and welcome to Simply Walk the Talk.
Making sense of the health and fitness world, one conversation at a time.
My name is Josh Holland.
And I'm Grace Nuttall. What's up?
Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome back.
Yeah, pumped for another episode.
As always, Grace. I feel like you're always pumped for an episode. As am I, so,
yeah, you know. Just enthusiastic.
Yeah, this is fun. This stuff is fun. So, I'm still in Nolens.
Nolens,
yeah. And the next trip I'm looking forward to is we'll have a few days in Miami. So,
ooh.
Yeah, welcome to Miami. So, maybe we'll get an episode from Miami. I think we'll be there next Friday. Yeah, so let's
amazing.
See. Cool.
That's cool. I feel like Miami is one of those places that I just can't go because I will burn as soon as I step off the plane.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so pale, like, English, Irish, like, just even the hint of sun in Miami, and I will just crisp up. It'll be tragic. So I'm jealous.
Well,
essentially,
I need to, you know, chat with you about how to take in the sun the best and how to block the sun the best, because
yeah, that could be interesting.
That would be a good myth, because not all sunscreen is good sunscreen. But anyway,
okay. Yeah. You've teased us with that
a little
one.
Teaser.
But, we'll get ahead with this. So this week is a really interesting topic. Do you want to introduce it?
Yeah, so we're going to focus on, how to maximize your fitness or how to optimize your training regimen. So proper programming, whatever, you know, resonates the best with you out there listening. We want to focus and dive a little deeper into, say, the protocols that I may give my clients and the protocols I practice on myself, just because I've been getting a lot of questions, or we've been getting a lot of questions about, okay, Josh, we know you guys have mentioned to train this way, to do this, to do that, but like, what are some more specific things to actually look forward to?
Yeah, I definitely see this as like getting the most out of your fitness program, or, you know, getting the most bang for your buck.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Which is cool. So I guess, like, let's start at the very beginning. I know we kind of touched a little bit on this last episode, but kind of your starting point with clients in terms of the programs you give them and the advice you give them.
Okay, so whenever I start with a first timer, as in not necessarily a first timer ever in the gym, but just a first timer with me, when I meet with someone, I like to take them through a full quality assessment. And the assessment can, you know, I think a person needs to be assessed each time they come into the gym. Doesn't necessarily have to be every day, but I think each time that they're going to train with me, I want to assess them, because if they pass the assessment the first time I see them, that doesn't mean that they're going to pass the assessment the next time I see them, because who knows, maybe they just stepped off of a plane after traveling for 10 hours, and maybe their hip flexors and their glutes are going to be super tight and low back's going to be tight. So I need to see how they are assessed that day. So an assessment, I created an assessment called MAP, which stands for Movement Analysis Pattern. And this is a 10-step assessment that sort of covers all movements. Everything from squatting to rotating to balancing to explosiveness, stability. There's a lot of things. Oh, and mobility. You can't forget that one.
Mm-hmm.
So it covers all of that in 10 little steps, doesn't require any tools, and can be done anywhere. And this may be something that maybe we'll give to our listeners at some point. But, you know, one of the first assessments, or step number one, is a deep squat. And most people that are listening to this right now might think to themselves, I can't even do a deep squat. Well, in my assessment protocol, it's sort of like one thing leads to the next. So if you can check off step one, then let's move it to step two, and then step three, step four, all the way up to 10. If you can't do a good deep squat, there's really no reason why we shouldn't be figuring out why, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just to kind of give you guys an idea of how my brain works when it comes to trying to program a workout or an exercise regimen for someone, I can see, okay, if this person can't get into a deep squat because they have limited ankle mobility, then we need to focus on that. We need to focus on mobilizing the calves and digging deep into the ankle and why it doesn't do what it does, X, Y, and Z. So that's usually my first step with first timers with me. The next step would then be let's figure out the best way to get them to be able to achieve the full assessment, and then we go into foundational training. So foundational training for me simply means things like isometrics, and we talked about this before, but I'll give you a little deeper idea as to what that means. So when you think of isometrics, Grace, what do you think of, or what do you think I mean when I mention that?
Kind of like isolated body movements, or like body strength training.
Okay.
So like maybe like a squat, or like a plank or something.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're right on. You know, I would say maybe more of a squat hold, because the isometric is sort of a fancier word for hold, right? To hold that for a certain duration. So, you know, and of course there's different isometric components happening in even dynamic movements. But in the way that I mean with foundational training is I want to make sure that you have a very strong core and all your stabilizer muscles are doing what they're supposed to do and they're being challenged. So things like planks, yes, are very good. Things like wall sits, squat holds, push-up holds, you know, hanging. I think hanging is very, very good just to strengthen the wrist and the grip. Because then that will translate into other movements down the road. So yes, isometrics, I usually like to go over the first full week with someone.
Yeah.
Now, granted, it can become boring, but you know, a rule of thumb in my book is, you know, I think the optimal level of planks should be anywhere around 2.5 to 3 minutes and beyond. So if you're at home thinking, you're listening to this and you're like, I can never do a 2.5 minute, 3 minute plank, then you've got some work to do, right? We need to strengthen your foundation, because the stronger we can make your foundation, the easier it'll be for you to adjust to the demands of a more intense workout in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's clear enough for you, but I wanted to kind of peel back the onion layers and say, okay, we have an assessment first, and then we focus on foundational training. I guess I can give you another level of what I would do with someone on week one or week two. For some of you out there that have worked with me, you know that especially if I'm working with you remotely, I like to give out, I even did this with you, Grace. I like to give out the 7 minute workout, the 7 minute scientific workout that was popularized by, I think, the New York Times. I think Gretchen Reynolds was the one who posted the article and came out with it. But it was essentially, they did research to show that in 7 minutes with 12 different exercises done at 30 seconds, done for 30 seconds with a 10-second break, was enough to be able to stimulate, you know, a great workout, so to speak. And so I adapted that and used that with the different apps to give to my clients while they're on the road, because there are things like jumping jacks for 30 seconds, push-ups for 30 seconds, wall sit for 30 seconds, plank for 30 seconds. And this sort of satisfies that foundational training. If you can do this, chances are you're ready for other types of training. So this is something else that if you guys are curious as to what I may have someone do, I've even recorded myself doing this workout so that you could follow along. Maybe we'll send this out to our followers as well. But
yeah, for sure.
This is very basic stuff, guys. You know, the 7 minute scientific workout, check it out. There's lots of different apps in the app store. There's lots of different links on YouTube. Just follow along. It's pretty simple.
Cool. So I guess you've established like a good foundational layer. What about people who, like, does this all apply to people who you've kind of, you know, have trained intensely in the past? Like if they've already got a good foundation.
Yes. Yeah.
Do they just skip a couple of steps or?
No. Great question. And honestly, this is a really good one, because this, I want to ring and resonate well with those who feel like, I'm a super athlete, I don't need to be doing this stuff. No. Because I don't care if you are a pro athlete of any kind of sport, I guarantee you can be challenged and crushed. Like, my whole goal with the foundation training is to see where you are, like with the same thing with the assessment. I think it's it's even more important for the super athletes, because they're probably doing more harm to their body than good, so that they need to be assessed even more, even better, mobilized even better. Yeah. But definitely, when it comes to foundation training, I want to see where you are now so that we can improve upon that. So if you're a super athlete and you can do a 6-minute plank off the bat, great. That doesn't mean that you check off that list and never have to do planks again. Let's get you to a 10-minute plank, you know? So there's always ways to get you to go better, to go higher, to go more deep into your training.
And I guess going back to basics and really kind of embellishing them and working on them can only, you know, benefit you in the long run.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and let's say, for instance, a basketball player like myself, like I love to play basketball, a basketball player may get wiped out on the tennis court. They may be similar, but they're different, very different. You know, it's a lot of lateral movement. It's a lot of, you know, one side dominant, swinging the tennis racket. And I'm talking about tennis right now because I've been getting crushed lately over the last couple of weeks playing tennis with my boss. He loves to play tennis. And, you know, at 73 years old, this guy is like, he does better than I do out there. But I'm learning, you know, it's like all of this muscle mass that I carry doesn't do so well on the tennis court, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas it does serve me well on the basketball court, but I'm used to it. You know, I've been playing basketball all my life. So when I'm training in tennis, that's a different modality. Therefore, I'm being challenged in a different way, and it's tough, you know?
Yeah. And that's applicable for when you change a training program, I guess, as well. Like if you're doing something that's more cardio-based and you're switching to strength training or vice versa, it's kind of like you're starting all over again in certain ways, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. So, yeah.
And I guess all of that is also applicable stuff for when you're doing, let's say a listener isn't going to be going to you as a trainer. They can still do this as a piece of self-analysis.
Absolutely.
Do you think?
Absolutely. Which is the reason why I came up with the MAP, the movement analysis pattern. It's because I wanted it to be easy enough for those, whether they're in the fitness industry or not, for the everyday average fitness enthusiast and trainers and everyone in between to be able to do this on their own. And once you learn it, it's pretty simple. It's 10 steps. I just ask that once you do try it out, don't rush through it. Take your time, you know, understand, because it also serves as a good warm up for the workout anyway. So
yeah.
I always get people asking me, well, what's a good warm up? Well, I think we'll talk about this here in a minute, but
yeah,
like the MAP serves as a good warm-up as well, because I noticed that if you do the movement analysis pattern 10 rounds, then that's about, I don't know, depending on how slow you go, that's about 5 minutes or so. And most people are kind of sweating already because it's challenging. It is challenging. So, anyway, if for those that are curious out there, I'll just rattle through it really quickly. The 10 steps are: step one is a deep squat. Step two, it's a deep squat with your elbows inside your knees, pushing your knees outward, creating external rotation at the hips. Step two is in that same position, but with your arms extended and your shoulders back in the girdle, just to show that you have external rotation at the shoulders. Step three, I ask you to put your hands behind your head with your elbows wide. All of this while you're in that deep squat, of course. And then step four is an overhead deep squat. So your arms are raised above your head, trying to get your biceps to your ears, which shows that you have good thoracic mobility. Step five, I just ask you to stand out of that deep squat, still with your arms raised, into an overhead squat. So now you're standing an overhead squat. I just want to see, once again, do you overextend at the low back? You know, do you have a problem with your thoracic spine? Step six would be your right knee is raised. So now we're focusing on your balance and your ankle stability and your hip stability as well. Step seven, you would rotate to the right. Since your right knee is raised, now we're creating rotational demands. And also it forces you to balance even more. And then we switch sides. So for step eight, we would go left knee raised, still with your arms over your head. Step nine, you would rotate to the left just to get that other side rotation. And then the last step would be step 10. You put both feet back down on the ground and you prepare for a nice jump and soft landing. And so throughout that whole movement, I'm looking to see, do your knees collapse? Do your ankles collapse? And do you land with control? You know, all these things. So That's the 10 steps.
Yeah, and we'll share the video. It's interesting. I've tried it. It's a good warm up for sure. And it's interesting because all those movements, like, they're not separated. They're all kind of fluid, aren't they? They kind of, like, it moves into each other.
Yeah.
Which is almost a bit of a challenge when you're doing it for the first time.
Well, yeah, thanks for noticing that, because that was another reason why I decided to come up with it, because over the decade plus that I've been training professionally, I've noticed that these are sort of the moves that end up being seen at some point throughout a person's fitness journey. So mm-hmm. I decided, okay, why not put them all together and start with the most important one first in my book and go from there. So yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Well, since you, speaking of bringing things up, since we're on the topic of warm-ups, do you mind, like, going into why warm-ups are so important and why we shouldn't be skipping them and the other kinds of warm-ups that you'd recommend?
Absolutely. Great point. I feel warm-ups are important, obviously, because, you know, we just don't want to hurt ourselves. And, you know, there's nothing more that frustrates me than a person being like, oh my God, I'm sorry, I'm so late, let's just go right into the workout. No. The workout is not just the part that, you know, where you start lifting or you start running or this and that. The workout starts with a proper warm-up. That's it, very simply put. And if you don't have enough time to do an hour-long workout or a 45-minute workout without being able to do a warm-up, then I would say just scrap that portion of the workout, because the most important thing is going to be how you warm up. Mm-hmm. And I believe a good warm-up is one that gets your heart rate up, that causes you to raise your core temperature. I even like when a warm-up slightly gets you sweating a little bit. And also one that mimics or sort of prepares you for the workout that you may be doing. For instance, if you're going to be doing sprints, then there's a certain type of warm-up that I would suggest that maybe is a little, like, faster in nature, so to speak. One thing I do not do, though, and there's a lot of research behind this, is regardless of the workout you're going to be doing, is I do not do long static holds or long static stretches for a warm-up. Yeah. I usually save that for the end of a workout. Okay, so you don't want your muscles to relax, so to speak, before you start to engage them, because then that gets you back into the state that you were in before you warmed up. So I like to save the static stretching for all that kind of fun stuff for after the workout, so you can you can lower your heart rate.
And what kind of length of time do you think is optimal?
I think, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes, or whatever satisfies what we talked about just a moment ago, which is, you know, does it get your heart rate up? Do you kind of get a little sweat? Are you prepared for the workout you're about to do? You could achieve that in a couple minutes. So a few rounds of the MAP could satisfy that, because the MAP is going to satisfy all of the movement that you may be doing anyway, you know? But to give you guys more of an example beyond MAP is I like to do things like, let's say, like, leg swings, just to kind of open up the hips a bit. I like to do, there's a popular exercise called Frankenstein's, where your arms are straight forward and you kick your legs up to touch your hands, and you kind of do that in a walking motion.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, the Frankenstein. It's kind of cool. That's a good one. I like to do a few squats, just body weight squats, I think are always really good. I like to do arm swings. There's also a thing I like to do, which I warm up, the drummer here on tour, his name is Joey Warrenker. I do warm-ups with him backstage before every show. And one of the things that we do for a warm-up, and he really likes it, he's glad that he started doing this, is called joint rolls. Now, we're not talking about marijuana. we're talking about the joints of the body, right? So what we do is I start from the ground and work our way up. So I start with ankle rolls. So you just balance on one foot and you roll the ankle in both directions. So clockwise and counterclockwise for a few reps. And then you obviously do the other ankle. Then you work your way up to the knees, then the hips. And with the knees, you're just putting your knees together, hands on your knees, and you're rolling them in a circle, so to speak, if that makes sense. You'll start to feel your ankles and your hips. To do the hips, to work the joint roll or the rolling of the hips, I just do hip circles. So kind of like you're doing a hula hoop, a slow motion hula hoop. I do, you know, 5 or 10 in one direction, 5 or 10 in the other direction. Then if your arms are hanging down, the next joint that's close to the hips would be the wrists. So I do wrist rolls, you know, opposite directions, and then, you know, counterclockwise, clockwise, and do a different things like that. Then we work our way up to the elbows. Then we do shoulders. Then I do the thoracic spine. So you kind of just do spinal twists. Yeah. And then last but not least, I do neck rolls or head rolls, right? So you're just kind of rolling your neck in that fashion. So that kind of satisfies all the opening up and the mobility throughout all the joints. Then I may go into jumping jacks, running in place, maybe some squat jumps, and then we go right into planks and wall sits. And that's a good thorough warm up. And that, that takes no longer than 10 minutes.
Okay. And then I guess you mentioned it briefly, but then with a cool down, because I think this is a step that a lot of people skip because, you know, you might have like just finished your workout and you'll be like, oh no, I just want to get out of here.
Of course. Like, of course. Yeah. No, you're right. You know, the cool down is also important as well. You know, if you have the time, I think it's great to roll on a like a foam roller or therapy roller. I think it's important to roll before and after if you have the time. But when I say if you have the time, means if you don't have the time, don't do the rolling before the workout, but definitely after the workout. Mm-hmm. Even if you just spend 5 to 10 minutes rolling, you know, your quads or your IT band or your calves, all of these things are important. And if you don't have a lot of time, just focus on one main area one time and then another area in the next time. But rolling should become your friend. In fact, those of you that follow my personal page, you may have seen me post a video of my new Viper, Hyper Ice Viper 2.0 vibrating roller. I use that when I'm just kind of lying on my bed. I could do it on the floor, but it just feels nice to be on my bed. You know, it's really cool.
Yeah. But I guess for those who don't know, what, which probably includes me, why is rolling important? Like, what does it do?
Well, it sort of helps to flush out the lactic acid that may have built up throughout the workout, and it also helps to relax and recover the muscles, right? So if we're truly satisfying a good workout, a good intense workout, then we need to sort of relax the musculature. We need to kind of, you know, undo sort of the tense areas or you know, any sort of knots, nodules. We need to kind of get rid of that as best we can. And when we sort of relax the muscles by doing something called myofascial release, then we can sort of prepare the body for recovery at night. And once we get some good protein in us. So you just want to cool your body down, make sure that you're not going to be too sore. If you roll after workout, chances are you're not going to be as sore as you would have been if you hadn't done your cool down, proper cool down. So there you
go. Okay. That's interesting. And then moving on as another way of kind of supplementing your workouts and making sure that you're being the best that you can. I think maybe if we just quickly dive into nutrition. I know we've talked a lot about it in the past, but I guess it's kind of like inspired by me actually asking you these questions like a couple of weeks ago when I started like lifting weights again. And that I guess is to do with like protein levels and macros and everything. If you just want to give an overview of that.
Yes, it's interesting, the conversation around nutrition, because it is such a compliment. And in fact, it's as important, if not more important, than the training itself. Mm-hmm. If you're eating properly, then you'll have the proper energy levels, and you'll be able to sustain a longer, tougher workout in general.
Yeah, and that's why obviously it's, you know, one of the four pillars of,
right.
of everything.
Right, exactly. So I would suggest, you know, for those who are embarking on a new fitness journey, you want to start training more intensely, or you just want to start training in general, regardless of your goals, you need to make sure you have the proper nutrition to keep you doing whatever it is you're about to embark upon. So, you know, making sure you're getting adequate amounts of nutrients, adequate amounts of calories, adequate amounts of you know, proteins and fats, healthy fats, that is, and healthy carbs. So, you know, it's really difficult to kind of generalize you should do this because it's very specific for each person and their mm-hmm. goals. But I definitely suggest, you know, getting an adequate amount or moderate amount of protein so that you can then recover well from your workouts. You need to get, you know, protein, branched chain amino acids. For those of you that never understood what BCAAs mean and why, you know, your nutritionist or your trainer told you to get BCAAs, that's branched chain amino acids. And sort of together, these help to rebuild the small muscle damage that we do during each workout. It helps to rebuild the musculature. So this is a great way to recover from nutrition. And so, you know, do you need to have it right after workout? No. Do you need to have it throughout your day at some point? Yes. I'm not a big fan of pre-workout drinks and all these things. I like to train fasted, but that doesn't mean that that's perfect for everyone. It's not ideal for everyone. Some people feel like they can't, especially if you're a sugar burner. If you're someone who's used to having lots of carbs and snacking all day long, I would definitely not suggest going into, you know, training without eating something until you've become more fat adapted and less reliant upon sugars. So that, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of questions around that, and people might, this might encourage people to ask more questions around that. But whatever it is, just go back to our pillars section. Reduce refined carbs in general. Eat moderate protein in general. There's a classic rule of thumb of maybe, you know, 1 gram of protein per pound of lean muscle tissue in your body, or lean muscle tissue you desire to have. That's kind of a good rule of thumb. And that goes against what is typically the 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight, because that's not always right either. So, you know, if you're a 200 pound man and you have, I don't know, let's say you have 180 pounds of lean muscle tissue, then you want to have, you know, 180 grams of protein. This is kind of a standardized rule of thumb for people who want to maintain their muscle mass or maybe build muscle mass. But I kind of look at it like, look, I don't have time to have a protein shake today, and I'm not going to eat, you know, a whole bird of chicken, right? So I'm just going to get the protein I get. That's kind of my philosophy. So
yeah, I've definitely found that it can be a bit stressful trying, because I've been tracking my macros, and I'm a vegetarian, and even though I cook all my food, it can be difficult to hit that protein target, even with like my protein shakes. So I guess, yeah, it kind of always comes back to it, isn't it? The point of being flexible and being able to roll with the punches and not get too stressed about things. I guess my next question then is, if you're not training with an instructor or anyone, that kind of level of, or even if you are training with someone, that level of accountability that you need with programs, kind of like, and I guess it goes a bit back to self-assessment, but knowing when you're doing the program, if you're doing the right thing, and if you're progressing at the right time.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes. It's it's interesting because, you know, I have many clients that tell me, Josh, it's just not the same, you know, without you there doing a session. Like if I send them a program while I'm on the road, which I've been doing a lot of, it is difficult, of course, right? Because you may not know if you're doing it correctly or if you're doing this and that. I think that's just a crutch. You know, give it a good shot, do your best, and you know, keep track of your time per exercise, or keep track of your reps per exercise, or keep track of your, you know, how hard you're breathing or your heart rate. You know, get different fitness trackers, anything that will help you be accountable. I know, like my brother, he likes to write down all of his exercises. That's great. You know, do you checklist these off? You know, I did, you know, 100 thrusters. I did, you know, 50 pull-ups. I did 20 push-ups. Okay, being accountable maybe to that notebook is your accountability outlet, so to speak. So I don't know, whatever you need to do to find your accountability, I say do it. You know, if it's, you know, I know some people, some guys who are out there that are like, look, I like to go to the gym, because, you know, there's hot girls there. Okay, well, that's your accountability, so to speak, right? Like, you're going to show up at noon at this gym, at this location, on this day, because you know that hot chick is going to be in the corner that, you know, keeps you accountable. So what? You know, if that's your tool, great. And if it works, that's great. But then also don't let that become the crutch where, let's say, a guy is like, man, because I've heard this before too, believe it or not. I've heard, yeah, you know, I want to start training with you, Josh, but I need to get in shape first. I'm like, well, how does that make sense? That doesn't really make sense, right? So, you know, let me help you become more accountable. I can check in with you, but then, you know, I need to know that on the other end that you're also checking in with yourself, you know, because you could easily tell me, yeah, I did the workout, but I couldn't finish all of it. Well, why not? You know, now we need to find out what's going to help keep you accountable. Or I didn't do it this week because I was really busy. Okay, so we need to find another or different accountability tool for you.
Yeah. So. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if that satisfies what you
No, I think it does. For. Yeah. I think it does.
Do you have any suggestions for accountability on that? Or anything else?
I guess just being really honest with yourself. Like, if you know that you haven't fully finished like a set of reps, then don't try and pretend that you have. You're like, the only person you're fooling is yourself, really. The only person you're cheating is yourself. So, like, yeah, I guess just being really conscientious. Like, if you are working with a specific level of weight 1 week and you're trying to increase it the next, just like keep pushing through and just be consistent, I guess.
Yeah, that's great. Be consistent and shut off the negative conversation in your brain.
Yeah, shut off the ego as well.
Bingo. Like, oh, yeah. Great one. Yes, be consistent and shut up or shut off the ego, because the ego is what really gets in the way of all of us. Like, we need to get out of our own way, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like sometimes the ego can help though, right? Because, like, that's the vainness of us, like with the mirrors in the gym. And, you know, the guy on the bench that has 135 pounds, well, like, oh, I should be able to do that for sure. Sometimes that can kind of helps us and it can push us. As long as it doesn't push you into hurting yourself, I say utilize it. It's another tool to be accountable. But don't let it be the crutch, or don't let it be the thing that keeps you from doing something as well. You say, I don't look good enough to do this workout because, you know, I've never done it before. Like, ah, so what? Challenge yourself. And just be consistent and just get, you know, small gains here and there if you have to.
Yeah. And again, I guess that honesty, like if I'm training by myself for 2 weeks and then I come and train in with you, I don't achieve anything if I claim that I've been doing the weights that I've been doing, or like, you know, that I've been working out as much as I have been.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't achieve anything. Like if I'm claiming that when I see you, when I actually haven't been doing that.
Right.
Like, of course. And also I imagine that you'd be able to tell anyway.
Yeah.
Because you'd be like, yeah, you haven't made that much progress. Like,
oh, definitely.
I'm calling you a bluff.
Yeah, for any of my clients out there that happen to be listening, oh, I know. I'm a very observant person, and I can usually tell if a person is doing something. And, I mean, of course, there's always reasons why other than just you haven't been doing it. But I'm well aware of this because I've been around the block for a while. So, anyway.
So we get to the end of a program, you know, let's say you're like, my housemate is on one where it's apparently like a Greek god weight training one, which I find hilarious.
Greek like the, god.
Yeah. I find these weight training program names so funny. And what was the one he finished recently? He finished one recently that had another very entertaining name. But anyway, you finish that, it's like 4 weeks, whatever. How do you pick a new program? I guess my question is, like, what makes a good program, what makes a program good to you in your eyes? Like, what aspects are worthwhile? And then kind of how do you change from one to the other?
Okay. So in my eyes, a good program is one that, progressively loads you and does not overload you, as in doesn't create an injury, doesn't push you too far too soon, but one that kind of gradually gets you to your goal, and one that also, you know, utilizes all body parts and multiple joints and, you know, full body movements and things like that. This is, you know, and so it's very broad, but definitely one that progressively loads a person is one mm-hmm. that I feel is good. And when and how should you progress from that? I think that, you know, programs can be cycled through. And they can be, you know, utilized time and time again because you can always change. You can change the time under tension. You can change the reps. You can change the weight. You can change the rest in between the exercises, or you can change all of those at the same time. You know, then once you've kind of exhausted that, maybe you can go to a different program altogether, but still one that helps you to achieve your goals by progressively loading you without hurting you. And that's it, you know. Mm-hmm. If it challenges you, some people love to be challenged. Like, I love to be challenged in different ways and doing different things. But then there's some type A personalities out there that don't. They want to know their routine every single time before they get into the gym. They want to know, like, how many reps today, how much weight. That's fine, too. But once again, it needs to be one that progressively loads you and does not injure you.
Yeah. Okay, and then my final question is... The common challenges and the questions that you're faced with by your clients, what kind of pieces of advice are you giving out the most when clients are tackling your programs?
So just specific to training?
Well, I guess, you know, like we're talking about getting the most out of a training program.
Right. Okay.
From your experience, are the challenges people face the most when you're helping yes. people do programs?
The advice I have to give the most is two things, and we can call this hashtag trust the process. Okay? Trust the process and practice patience, basically. Okay? So be patient, because I find that there's many people out there who really feel like, listen, for the amount of effort I'm putting into this, whether it be the nutrition side of it or the workout side of it or everything in between, the amount of will and energy I'm putting into this, plus the money, everything I'm investing into this, I feel like I should have results tomorrow. It's like, that could work, but don't forget that it took a long time to get you to where you are today. And it's going to take a long time to get you where you want to be. And sometimes our goals are like so unrealistic that you're never going to get there. So you're setting yourself up for failure in the first place. So I would say, you know, practice patience, trust the process. And if you don't hit your goal, just knowing that you're doing something healthy for yourself anyway should be a huge win, should be a huge goal. So, you know, I have some model clients. There's a young girl that I'm working with right now who, I have to say this to her quite a bit, and if she's listening, she's probably going to be laughing right now, but I tell her all the time, just trust the process and practice patience, because you will get there. The things you're doing today, you know, may not show up on your results until 2 weeks from today. And so if you just give up, well, what are you giving up for? Like, you're giving up to going back to eating bad and not working out? Like, that doesn't make sense to me either. Yeah. If anything, if you don't hit your ultimate results, then you still have landed upon the stars, right? Shoot for the moon, land among the stars kind of thing. Well, shoot to be your optimum, you know, the most elite version of yourself. And if you don't hit that exact target, you've become just better anyway. So
yeah, I think that's a really, really important piece of advice, because I think particularly around these summer months, people really just want results in a week. And it can be really frustrating if, as you said, if you're putting all this time and energy and money into something and you don't see immediate results, particularly because we are a society where we want things instantly. And I think there's a worrying risk of people kind of going to more extreme measures if they don't see results. Like, let's say you're on a diet and you're working out, it might cause people to drastically reduce their calorie intake to try and get results quicker, which actually is just, it's going to have much more negative results in the long run. You might lose a bit of weight sooner, but you're damaging your body much more. So I think that's a really key piece of advice.
Great. Well, we hope that all of you feel the same as Grace with that. And we hope that you guys are, you know, learning something from this. And I think this is a good point to wrap up.
Yeah.
And maybe we can, let's go over, you know, following along the 5-minute journal. What are you grateful for, Grace?
What am I grateful for? I'm grateful for the opportunities to, I guess I'm kind of stealing your one a bit that you've done in the past, but I'm grateful for opportunities for meeting new people and hearing their stories. Again, like I was listening to the Wheel of Fit episode again. I'm really, really grateful to have the opportunity to connect with people that I would never have spoken to before and hearing their stories. And I think that's really special.
Awesome. And to that point, I think, like, as much as we've talked about your roommate, he's kind of this, like, unicorn, right? We've never really, like, seen him or heard of him. I think, you know, connecting with him, I know I've met him once at least.
Yeah.
But that could be cool to maybe have him on if he's up for it one of these days.
I'm sure he'd be more than up for it. That would be
okay.
Hilarious.
Great.
We can grill him about his Greek god program.
Yes. Yeah. We'll definitely grill him on that. But no, I think that would be cool. So we could, you know, try to get him on for one of these episodes. But as far as what I'm grateful for, I'm grateful for the opportunities to do what I love, which is, you know, I work in this field and training and things like that, and travel the world, and to be able to do this as my job, as my work. And, you know, I've been able to explore my own country, right? Like, so I've been able to explore parts of the U.S. that I've never gone to and probably never would have gone to. In a very, very cool way. So traveling on this, you know, Roger Waters tour has really opened up my eyes to other parts of the U.S. that I haven't been, and I'm really grateful for that opportunity. So, you know, and this may go overseas as well. So,
my gosh.
So a little peek into what's to come. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, on that note, I think also following on your point, if there are any listeners out there who feel like any of this really resonates and you want to share your story, get in touch. We'd love to have you on as a guest and to chat to you and see what you're all about.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be really fun. Okay, well, that's it for this week. Thanks for another great episode, Josh.
And thank you, Grace. And thank you to all of our listeners. We truly, truly appreciate all your support. So thanks again. And until next time, bye. Thanks for listening to Simply Walk the Talk.
If you have any questions or comments, shout out to us on social media or email us at hello@simplywalkthetalk.com.
And if you like this episode and it was helpful in any way, feel free to share.
Thanks.